I love instruments so much. If I really wanted to play guitar, I would go play guitar. I don't want to play guitar. I want to play the banjo, but I want to take things I can learn from these other instruments and put them on the banjo and see what they bring out of the banjo that maybe hasn't been heard before.
One of today's top instrumental virtuosos, banjoist Bela Fleck, brings a new collaboration with the string quartet Brooklyn Rider to the Fontana series Saturday night at Chenery Auditorium in Kalamazoo. I'm Kara Lawrence, and Bela Fleck is my guest tonight on WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. Glad you could come along. Classical music fans might be interested to know that Bela Fleck was named for the great Hungarian composer Bela Bartok, and that his two middle names, Anton and Lajos, refer to composers Anton Webern and Lajos Janacek. Growing up in New York City, Bela Fleck attended the High School of Music and Art, where he studied French horn. Around that time, his grandfather gave him a banjo, and he quickly progressed in lessons with Tony Trischka. The groundbreaking band Bela Fleck and the Flecktones came along in 1988. Soon, Bela Fleck branched out in collaborations with widely different performers, from jazz pianist Chick Corea to Indian tabla player Zakir Hussain. To date, he has been nominated in more Grammy categories than any other musician, with nominations in country, pop, jazz, bluegrass, classical, folk, spoken word, composition, and arranging. To get the story on how his collaboration with the string quartet Brooklyn Rider started, I had to go back a little further and ask him about another collaboration. So in 2011, the Nashville Symphony Orchestra and you debuted your concerto for banjo and orchestra with the fantastic title, The Imposter. And a couple years later, it was released on an album that also included a new work for banjo and string quartet, Night Flight Over Water. And my first question is that how you first met Brooklyn Rider, this wonderful New York string quartet?
That's exactly right. I had written the banjo concerto, and I had gotten a major classical label, Deutsche Grammophon, to agree to put it out, but it was only 35 minutes long. So we had these discussions about what I might write to complete the album. And one of the wish list compositional ideas I had, I've always wanted to do, is write for banjo and string quartet. And they loved that idea. And then the search was on for string quartet, would I work with? And these guys came up rather quickly as being one of the best choices I could make.
How did you go see them in concert, or did you just arrange a meeting so you could all get to meet each other and hang out?
Yeah, well, I listened to their records first, and I really liked, of course, their playing, but I also liked the choices they made and the kinds of music they liked to get involved with. And then I went up to meet them in Brooklyn, and I showed them some sketches I had already started on, and I got them to play them and give me their input on what, you know, what really worked and what didn't. But the truth is, they're such good musicians that they made all my sketches sound a lot better than I thought they were. And the key was, you know, what really goes together rather than what's good. Because it all sounded, they're such good interpreters. They made all my stuff sound really good.
Did you do any kind of research into the history or the way composers have chosen to write for that combination of strings?
Well, I didn't have a lot of time. So I did a very condensed study in which I listened to some of the great works, you know, obviously the Bartok string quartets and the Beethoven string quartets. And I listened to some Shostakovich and, you know, basically the Debussy, you know, anything I could find where someone had what was considered an incredible string quartet, just to get a sense of the textures that were possible. And then I just sort of forgot about all that and just started to just write away. And I think I was more inspired by, you know, playing with these guys in person than I was by listening to anybody else's writing. Because I think a string quartet is such a flexible entity that a lot of things can work with a string quartet a lot easier than they might with an orchestra, for instance, which is a rather unwieldy elephant of a creature. It's very hard for fast changes to happen on a dime. And a string quartet is a lot like a small grass band or jazz group in that way, that they can... it can really be very flexible.
Mm-hmm. Brooklyn writer, as you said, seeks out brand new composers. They're willing to take on all kinds of styles and voices of contemporary writers. So they're pretty good at it at this point, adapting to brand new things.
I think they're really amazing at it. In fact, I have to say, they impress me over and over and over again. And they're also willing to go deep into the DNA of the stuff and figure out how it works and have these dialogues about how every single note is played. And then they're also willing to bend to the impulses of the moment. So just because we've had all these discussions about how every section should go doesn't mean that if there's a wind blowing through the group, you know, when we're performing live that says we should play it faster or with a different energy, you know, we all follow that. So that's a lot of great properties for this one group to have.
Did the title Night Flight Over Water, did that come first, or did you add that at the end of your piece when you'd finished it?
That came at the end, although I always had this feeling that the piece was kind of an escape from somewhere. And as I realized what the imposter was about, I kind of realized what Night Flight was about, and that's when the title came. Because the imposter is kind of, it's a three-movement a concerto, but the first movement, maybe the banjo is sort of attempting to infiltrate into like maybe a masquerade party, and nobody quite realizes that the banjo is in the middle of the orchestra. And in the second movement, it's kind of working. I call that one integration. The first movement I call infiltration. And then third movement is the truth revealed, in which the banjo suddenly reveals that it actually is a banjo and starts playing some Scrugg flicks. And at that point, there's a chase. And at the end of the imposter, the banjo runs out of the castle, maybe perhaps with the king's silver or the golden scepter or whatever. And behind the castle, there is a creek, fast-running water down the mountain, too. And the banjo player jumps in there and escapes. And that's where Night Flight Over Water comes in. Night Flight appears to be the escape from the castle.
That's a pretty elaborate folk tale you've got there.
Thank you. Thank you. I have an incredible imagination, apparently.
That will come in handy with your young, your one-year-old.
I'm expecting him to teach me a lot of stuff. I've already stolen some stuff from him because he likes to sit at the piano and bang things out, and I've taped some of them, and I've incorporated some of them into the next piece I wrote after Night Flight, which was a chamber orchestra piece. And I look forward to ripping them off until he realizes it.
Well, I've made the assumption, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Night Flight is going to be on one of the featured pieces on the concert for Fontana Chamber Arts here in Kalamazoo. The rest of the program says it'll be announced from stage, so maybe you can help me out and give me some idea of what will be happening.
Yeah, well, Night Flight is the main, you know, there's the big piece of the night, but there are also a lot of other pieces, and I've been incorporated into several of Brooklyn Rider's pieces, one written by Colin Jacobson, the first violinist in the group. Actually, there's two first violinists in the group, the way they arrange things. And also, we were doing a piece from the Flecktones. We're doing a Newgrass Revival, kind of bluegrass Celtic piece. And then they're going to play some solo stuff, you know, some quartet stuff, and I'm going to play some solo stuff. So the night goes by rather quickly with a lot of variety.
When you're on stage with Brooklyn Rider, a couple of things occur to me. You're not used to people being buried in sheet music. Is the visual communication a problem at all?
Well, you know, as much as we've played this music, those of us who are reading are touching base with that music. They're not staring at it intently. They're playing. A lot of memory has taken over at this point. But whenever you're not quite sure, you glance down to make sure you're where you think you are. And so there is a lot of interaction. There's a lot of looking at the page and then looking at each other. And there are pieces that I have memorized and pieces that I have to read. And then they have pieces of their own that they have memorized that they don't have to read, but I have to read. So there's all kinds of combinations of paper watching. But somehow the night feels very natural. It doesn't feel like people are, you know, playing a recital. It flows very well.
Over the years here in Kalamazoo, the Fontana series that you're appearing on has gradually changed our concept of what we thought of as chamber music over the years, from straight-up classical ensembles to jazz players like Jason Moran, who came last year, or ensemble of viol players and Renaissance music like Fretwork, to a solo bass recital from your friend Edgar Meyer. So we've really seen the breaking down of categories and what kind of music belongs where. And I think in the wider world, you've been a big part of that. And I think it's a great time for music.
Well, thank you. I think there's always great music around. But when a presenter really can figure out how to present a lot of different variety with a single series, everybody wins. Because if everybody knows what the series is going to be, completely, and there's no curiosity, there's no surprises, I don't know that they'll keep coming forever, you know? And it's just good for people to learn new things and hear new things and have their horizons broadened. I'm glad to be a part of that.
I wish it weren't so hard for musicians to make a living wage in this exciting time.
Well, you know, it's people can make, you know, a lot of musicians are making a living playing, and, you know, you really have to fight for your position and make sure you're offering something that's unique and worthwhile enough that people will bring you into play. And, you know, that's probably why I'm always on a search to try and find things that I haven't done and hopefully that the banjo hasn't done that make it worth listening and also worth my time and effort to work really, because I work really hard on music. So I like to pick things that I really believe are worth that kind of effort. But then, because once I get going, I'm not going to come up for air for a long time till I figured it out or got close or learned a lot from it at least. So I think it kind of works for everybody.
In the last year, I've had the privilege of talking to Edgar Meyer, who visited for a solo concert, and last month Howard Levy came on the show to talk about Trio Globo, and I see a similarity with them and maybe you in that, you know, the instrument you chose to express yourself with came with a set of expectations at the time that you had to transcend that. I know Edgar said he was really unhappy at the time that he couldn't find a teacher who would allow him to explore different styles of music. Is that something you had to overcome too?
Not really, but there wasn't a structure for that kind of learning, and most of it had to be done on my own. So while there were teachers that were encouraging, they didn't really know how to do what I was trying to do. There wasn't really a template for it. And I think that's what was Edgar's problem too, is he could be taught quite easily, you know, how to play standard classical repertoire as it had been played, but he couldn't be taught how to do what had never been done before. And that was why he was created, so that he could figure it out and figure out his own way to do things. And he's a really good friend of mine, and as is Howard Levy. He's played in the Flecktones since the beginning and in the early 90s when we started Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. He was in it, left after 3 years and came back a couple of years ago, and we've been playing together again, and that's been really sweet. And he, you know, he would be the first to tell you that he loves the piano and the harmonica, and his love of them encourages his desire to explore the edges of them. It's not that he doesn't want to be a harmonica or that he doesn't want to be a piano. It's that he wants to be the best harmonica or piano that he can be. And I think Edgar would say the same thing. You know, he probably doesn't play the bass because he wanted to play, you know, in the altissimo register, you know, which, you know, he can play so high on the bass that it sounds like a violin. Well, you know, if he wanted to play the violin that bad, he would have played the violin. He wants to play the bass. He loves the bass, you know. So this is just exploring the bass to its fullest when he goes into that range. Everything that a bass can do, not just things that are expected. And I guess that's how I look at the banjo is I love the instrument so much. If I really wanted to play guitar, I would go play guitar. I don't want to play guitar. I want to play the banjo, and I want to play, but I want to take things I can learn from these other instruments and put them on the banjo and see what they bring out of the banjo that maybe hasn't been heard before. And that's the fun of it.
So I'm one of those people that has a classical background. I played flute for a long time, and then I branched out into Irish playing and music. And when I started, I was bad for quite a long time. And now I'd be worried about adding anything else on and maybe spreading myself too thin and not being able to pick up the feel of these different styles, because it does take a lot of effort.
Well, that's certainly true. You've only got so much energy to put into it. But I think the people that explore the edges, maybe they're folks that, started the instrument early enough that they absorbed the basics fairly early and needed something to stoke up their, they needed some place to pour their energy and their intellect, because there was, the basic stuff that had been done, they picked it up so fast, And that's kind of almost a problem in a way, because they don't want to play the stuff that's already been played, because they've been playing that since they were, first started. They're ready for some new challenges. I'll tell you one thing about being a musician, and especially being one that's trying new things, is you really have to be willing to sound bad. And when you said, you sounded bad in the beginning and then it started to come together, well, that's the leap that we all have to make every time we learn new music. And at the point when you're not willing to sound bad anymore, then you want to settle into the music you're playing and just go into the nuances of that, because you already can sound good at it. That's wonderful. That's fine. But people that are willing, I've seen Edgar do this again and again, and I do it all the time, where I just have to go back to square one to figure out how to play this new thing. And I just have to sound terrible, and I have to trust and hope that I'm going to come out of this trough into sounding good again in this new area. And that's where your ego takes a beating. But when you come out the other side and you're sounding good at something that you haven't done before, it's a great feeling.
Well, Bela Fleck, I can't thank you enough for your thoughts today, and all the best on your concert here in Kalamazoo.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.